Hey, this is David Hobby from Strobus.com, and you're listening to the Petapixel Photography Podcast with Sharky James.
Welcome to the Petapixel Photography Podcast, episode 14. Is Sony A-mount dead? And how can Leica do what Canon and Nikon haven't? In this episode, is the writing on the wall for Sony A-mount? Janet Jackson out-dweezels Dweezel. Leica does what Canon and Nikon haven't and fields a serious mirrorless camera. Drone registration seems imminent, and another photographer gets harassed. All that and more in episode 14 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Thank you so much, David, for opening the show. I really, truly appreciate it. I know that for the many thousands of people listening to this, no introduction is needed. But for those who don't know, David Hobby, while still a staff photojournalist for the Baltimore Sun back in 2006, created the very influential Strobus.com blog. With that blog, he pretty much single-handedly kicked off the off-camera flash revolution as he educated millions and showed us the light. Literally. David is one of the most influential figures in photography, and if you want a master's class in lighting, hit Strobus.com, Strobist.com. There is a lot of information there. And I'd like to thank you all for joining us here in episode 14 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. We appreciate you all so much, and thank you for subscribing, rating, and reviewing us in iTunes or wherever else you listen to us. Okay, with that, I'm your host, Sharky James. Let's hit it. If you're a Sony A-mount user, you've got quite a selection of excellent lenses available to you. But it's been extremely obvious that the company has been focused, no pun intended, on its E-mount system of lenses and bodies. That's an understatement, right? Well, on October 15, 2015, a Twitter user reached out to Sony UK with this tweet, quote, at Sony UK, why so difficult to get an answer to my question? Is A-mount camera body development dead? End quote. Surprisingly, Sony UK answered, sparking debate about whether or not the A-mount system is dead by saying, quote, we have no A-mounts planned. We recommend our A7 range. E-mount, but with an adapter. LA-EA4, LA-EA3, A-mount lenses can be used. End quote. Okay, we're going to parse that in a sec, but let's look at the facts here first. The last A-mount camera was announced nearly a year and a half ago, and that was the Sony A77 Mark II. Does it look like Sony is interested in the A-mount line if you look at just bodies? Not so much, especially when you consider how many E-mount bodies have been refreshed since then. A lot of them. So let's look at their A-mount glass. Back in April 2015, they announced two of them, the 24-70mm f2.8 and the 16-35mm f2.8. Both classic zooms, and with those, they filled out the A-mount line even further. So together, that starts to paint a picture, I think. No new A-mount bodies in 2015. Like I said, it's been a year and a half, and just two new lenses. It's the lack of new bodies, though, that I find more telling. Okay, so 3 weeks earlier, on September 24th, 2015, Sony UK responded in a similar manner on its Facebook page, saying, quote, we have no full-frame A-mount cameras planned. We can recommend our Alpha 7 range, which is full-frame and outstanding quality, end quote. Now, they didn't say we have no full-frame A-mount cameras planned in 2015. They said we have no full-frame A-mount cameras planned, then directed customers away from the A-mount line and toward its E-mount line. I don't know how much more proof than that one needs without an official press release. It seems pretty clear. Sony A-mount users are not too happy about this, as you might expect. They've been vocal all over the internets. That's right, the internets. And many of them came from the old Minolta system, which Sony adopted for the A-mount system. They're basically interchangeable. And many of these users are feeling a little bit left at the altar, not wanting to take what many of them feel would be a step back by going to the E-mount system. And I get where they're coming from. I'd be kind of annoyed too, but the writing has been on the wall for some time now. Sony has been driving the shiny new cars in its garage, and the old ones just appear to be up on blocks. So I'm calling it right now. A-mount is dead. Not even on life support. It's dead. I'd be incredibly surprised after these recent public statements if we ever see a new A-mount body. And if we do, it would have to be incredible. And I don't know why they would put any effort into an A-mount body ever again.
Everyone's eyes are diverted over to the E-mount bodies. That's clearly where their heart is, and they keep directing people that way. If you tweet them and you ask about A-mount bodies, they say, hey, forget about those, basically. Go look at our E-mount glass and bodies. You can adapt them. Everything's cool. What does that tell you? A-mount is dead. So where do you think that leaves things today? Sony has all this A-mount glass in production and in the supply chain. It's my personal belief that when it comes to the A-mount lenses, you're going to still see Sony making these until E-mount equivalents are available. Then you're going to see the A-mount stuff slowly discontinued. I think that makes a lot of sense, especially if they're putting all their efforts into the E-mount bodies and lenses. I'm expecting 2016 to be the year when Sony releases a whole lot of fast f2.8 glass in E-mount. No doubt about it. I believe that the A-mount stuff right now is seen as being transitional. E-mount is where they're spending all their R&D money, it seems. And here's another telling thing. Look at all the Sony Artisans of Imagery. If you go online and look, most of them are shooting E-mount bodies. Or maybe they have some A-mount bodies still, but the E-mount bodies are their main cameras these days. I can't recall the last time I saw any of the Sony Artisans posting about A-mount system anything, unless it was to note that you can adapt those lenses to E-mount bodies. That's curious, don't you think? A-mount, you valiantly served your purpose. I just think you're dead now. That's just a guess, but it seems to be kind of apparent. All right, dentists and doctors, listen up. Finally, there's a pro Leica mirrorless body for you. I kid. It's an old joke. Leicas are often called jewelry for dentists. What's funny is they're actually pretty good photographers. Being overachievers, they take their photography seriously. So I really shouldn't joke about them because they're actually pretty good. But the real joke here is that Leica has beat Canon and Nikon to the game with an actual impressive mirrorless camera, what one might call a pro body. Now, while incredibly expensive, of course, its specs are the real deal. Leica gets it. They're actually fielding a camera that can handle its business, not like the embarrassments that are Canon and Nikon's mirrorless bodies. Again, you didn't know that the big two had mirrorless bodies? Exactly. I don't know anyone else who owns them either. Called the Leica SL, this camera is clearly aimed at taking on Sony's offerings. The company saying it's, quote, a mirrorless camera system designed for professional photographers, end quote. It features a 24 megapixel full frame sensor with a maximum ISO of 50,000. They've chosen not to include the low pass filter, opting instead for maximum sharpness and contrast. And Leica is claiming it has, quote, the fastest autofocus on the market, end quote. Now, we'll see about that once these things are out and we can actually test them. But they're making that claim. Maybe it's true. We'll see. You'll notice that when Canon and Nikon comes out with mirrorless bodies, they don't make anything close to claims like that. They're like, yeah, it has autofocus. That's about it. It has an impressive 2 GB buffer, allowing for up to 11 full-res photos per second, and can save them to dual SD memory card slots in 8-bit JPEG and 14-bit RAW DNG simultaneously. Now that's crazy talk right there. It's pushing a lot of data. There's a 4.4 megapixel 0.80x magnification electronic viewfinder with a technology that they're calling Leica iRes. That's E-Y-E-R-E-S. They're saying that it boasts a refresh rate so high that, quote, it's always smooth and consistent, end quote. Now that sounds pretty interesting. I don't think the EVFs out there and the other cameras, Sony, Olympus, Panasonic, etc., are too bad. But we'll see how this is. Maybe it doesn't at all look like you're looking through an EVF. That would be cool. There's also a 2.9-inch 1.04 million dot touchscreen LCD on the back in case you don't want to use the EVF. This looks to be a very ruggedly built body made of solid aluminum. It's weather sealed, and that LCD on the back is scratch resistant and has an anti-glare coating. You know, for the price of this camera, it should come with an assistant holding an umbrella for shade over you. No need for anti-glare coating. Just saying. The SL uses Leica L-mount glass, and 3 new lenses have been announced. A 24-90mm f2.8-f4, which will launch at the same time as this camera. A 90-280mm f2.8-f4 due in early 2016. And a 50mm f1.4 in late 2016. Existing Leica T lenses will be compatible without an adapter, but Leica S, M, and R lenses will require one. As for video, this camera seems quite capable and serious about that as well.
The Leica SL can do 4K video at 24 or 30 frames per second and full HD, aka 1080p, at 120 frames per second. When shooting video, the camera will show the safe area, aspect ratio, zebra function, and the mic's recording level. There's also an optional audio adapter for connecting an external mic, so that's pretty cool. This camera is definitely the real deal. Available November 16, 2015, the Leica SL Type 601 comes in at a hefty $7,450 US. Yeah, I told you it was dentist or doctor money, didn't I? The 24-90mm f2.8 to f4 lens, which launches at the same time, like I said, will run $4,950. So back up the Brinks truck now, because if you want a serious mirrorless camera from Leica, it's going to put a dent in the bank account. But wow, on paper at least, this looks to be a solid offering. Now ask yourself, why haven't Canon and Nikon done this yet? Seriously, what's their deal? We all know that it's going to happen at some point. DSLR sales are down, mirrorless sales are up, and what they have out there now in the mirrorless arena just isn't lighting the world on fire. Will they offer up something more serious in 2016? We'll see. It seems like every year we're saying that. Did you know that Elmer Fudd was originally a wildlife photographer? I didn't either. Wait, unless you answered yes, in which case, never mind. But it's true. In the first episode featuring Elmer Fudd, entitled Elmer's Candid Camera, way back in 1939, he studies wildlife photography and tries to shoot his furry nemesis with an old view camera. But that doesn't last long, as we know, because Fudd goes violent and from then on decides that the only shooting of Bugs Bunny he's going to do is with a shotgun. He wasn't a very good shot or photographer. Just saying. One of the most requested features in Photoshop, at least from those I've talked to, has been being able to customize the toolbar. This is something we've wanted for many, many years now, and it looks like it's finally coming soon to Photoshop CC. Under the Edit menu, there's now going to be a Toolbar section. In it, you'll be able to reorder and regroup the tools in your main toolbar and assign tools and groups to extra tools. That'll be for putting lesser used tools into their own slot at the bottom of the main toolbar. You'll also have the ability to customize the individual keyboard shortcut keys. And from what Adobe tells us, it looks like we're going to be hearing a lot more about upcoming features of Photoshop in the coming weeks. So that should be fun. Maybe they'll surprise us with something we haven't heard of yet. If you listen to episode 13, you heard me call for a complete rewrite of Adobe Photoshop Lightroom, which is clearly bloated. I don't think that anyone could say that it's not with a straight face, because it just is. It's a fact. Photoshop could use a diet too. But not like Lightroom. And why? Because Photoshop is mostly a one photo at a time kind of sitch, right? But with Lightroom, you're often importing thousands of photos, rendering full-size previews of each of them, and they're likely going into one ginormous catalog. And that's because most people don't break their catalogs up. It's inconvenient. If there's any program that should be rewritten and optimized, it's definitely Lightroom. That's what I want from Santa Claus this year. But nope. Likely getting cold again. How would you like the world's fastest 135mm lens? Well, for just under $3,000 US, it's the Miticon Speedmaster 135mm f1.4 that you're seeking. Chinese company ZY Optics has opened pre-orders for this lens, which boasts a very wide aperture for this focal length. And if you want one, now's the time to make that happen, as less than 100 will ever be made. They'll be showing off this lens at Photo Plus Expo in New York City this week, along with the Speedmaster 25mm f.95, Creator 135mm f2.8 Mark II, and Speedmaster 35mm f.95 Mark II. Yes, they make fast glass. They're not cheap, but owners of their lenses seem to love them. ZY Optics says, quote, "The development and material cost is extremely high. It's currently the fastest 135mm lenses in the market, which is still in production. It is not necessarily a retail item, but a collector's item," end quote. All right, hopefully it's not a collector's item that people don't actually use, because that's a lot of money to spend. Collect Beanie Babies or something. Hey, it was time for a late 90s reference. Let's move on and pretend that did not happen. All right, cool. Let's do it. This new lens has a minimum focusing distance of 5.25 feet, has a nice 11-blade aperture for creamy bokeh, a clickless aperture ring, a ginormous 105mm filter thread, and it's fairly heavy at 6.6 pounds.
It'll be available in Canon, Nikon, and Sony FE mounts. And if you're investing in one of these, it'll require a $500 deposit on the ZY Optics website. Notice that in addition to Canon and Nikon, it's available in Sony's full-frame FE mount. I point this out to illustrate that increasingly we're seeing companies target Sony in addition to Canon and Nikon. So that's really interesting. Again, I'm a huge Sony fanboy. I readily admit it. But it looks like I'm not alone because these companies are coming out with glass in Sony FE mount more and more these days. Sony cannot be denied. And that's not to say that Fujifilm, Panasonic, and Olympus don't make great cameras. They do. But Sony is outselling all those other mirrorless makers. It's worth noting, though, that this is a manual focus lens and can be adapted to just about any system, I think.
I tell ya, it seems like every few episodes or so, we're having a report on yet another star, or fallen star, who thinks their image is so important that it's okay to go for a complete photography rights grab. This time, it's even more ridiculous, and the star is Janet Jackson. For the younger members of our audience, Janet Jackson was not only Michael Jackson's sister, she was actually a bona fide star, a big one. Now, not so much. And that's okay. Everyone has their day in the sun in that business. But what's not okay is the contract she expects photographers to sign. Under condition of anonymity, a Petapixel reader sent us a contract for Miss Jackson's Unbreakable World Tour 2015. And the terms are, in my opinion, quite ridiculous. And this is the first time we've seen an extreme restriction on the time photographers are allowed to shoot her concerts, or any concert. This is crazy. In case you don't know, the industry standard is 3 songs. They want photographers to get in, get their shots, and get out of there so they can get on with the show. And 3 songs, while not a lot of time, is enough to get a variety of shots given adequate lighting and use of the stage. If you know what you're doing, you can make that work. If you don't, 3 songs seems awfully short. So how do you feel about having just 30 seconds to do your job? Yes, you heard correctly. 30 seconds. As in half a minute. As in 1/6 of the average song. I've shot a ton of concerts over the years. We're talking big names. And I've never seen anything less than 2 or 3 songs minimum. 30 seconds is so ridiculous that it's comical. I've never heard of anyone doing that. Janet Jackson clearly doesn't want photographers there. And that's obvious. 30 seconds just isn't enough time to get a good image. You might luck into one, but for most, it's just not going to happen. For instance, she could be in horrible lighting, or she could be performing with her back to your position in that allotted time, and then you're out of luck. Who knows what the real reason is for such a severe time limit? Some have speculated that since she's not 20 anymore, she wants to limit the less than ideal photos that might result from photographers being there and shooting longer. I don't know. But if that's true, this limit will actually result in worse photos of her surfacing. Photographers want to submit their best images. They're not looking for photos that make the artist look horrible to be published. They want their best in those publications or websites. But with so few images to choose from as you're blasting away spray and pray style, the keeper rate is just going to go way down. 30 seconds is not enough time. With a contract like this, you're going to annoy photographers so much that you might actually see worse photos being released into the wild. As if the time limit wasn't bad enough, Miss Jackson wants complete control over use of the images shot. She's asking photographers to sign a work-for-hire contract in which all images, all, become property of her production company, and anything beyond single use in a news article must be approved in advance and in writing. That is just craziness. The photographer who sent this in to us said, quote, "I'm not seeing any money from Janet Jackson's people. Yeah, I have my outlet that I work for, but that doesn't give them the right to take advantage of that and strong arm my pictures away from me for doing my job," end quote. You know, this never used to be a problem. Artists used to be incredibly happy to be photographed and get publicity. But these days, you've got thousands of photographers in your audience, essentially, shooting photos and videos with their smartphones, uploading them to social media, and doing that job for you. So the real photographers, some who were shooting Janet Jackson back when she actually had songs on the radio, they're getting treated like the enemy these days, and that is not cool. Don't forget that old saying about treating someone well while you're on the way up, because you may be seeing them while you're on the way down. In this case, Janet Jackson is nowhere near the top of the charts these days. She should be happy to get great images by competent professionals. Let them do their jobs and don't demand rights to their images. If it wasn't cool back in 1989 when you were a big star, it shouldn't be okay now. Do the right thing. No one is making a fortune off your images. There just isn't very high demand for them. And that may sound harsh, but it's reality. Treat photographers better and they'll make you look like a star, not a diminished one. Your contract does that quite well. If your lifelong dream has been to shoot at ISO 6, now you can. Okay, first you'll need a film camera, so there's that. But the folks at Lomography have announced a new 35mm film stock called Kono Danau. This limited edition, ultra slow film at ISO 6 isn't very sensitive to light, of course, so it's a natural for long exposure photography. We're talking exposures in the minutes rather than the seconds. Created by Kono, that's with an exclamation after it, and sold exclusively through Lomography, the C41 process color negative film was originally designed for transferring digital images to film during post-production in the movie industry. But when used for still photography, it produces photos with a, quote, retro tungsten, unquote, look. If you have a film camera and want to give this a shot, or 36, as they come in 36 exposure rolls, they're available in packs of 3 for $38 US on the Lomography website. If you own Ellen Crom gear, you know just how sweet it is. It's great kit, as they say over in the UK. And now they've released the Skyport HS transmitter with up to 1/8000th of a second, high-speed sync, and more. It's hard to believe, but it has been a decade now that Skyports have been available, and you might be surprised to hear that they've sold over 400,000 of those units. I don't know how many units Pocket Wizard has sold, but it must be in the millions, right? Everyone wants Pocket Wizards. These new Ellen Crom units, though, feature a rather large LCD display to adjust the settings of your various flashes, and with its high-speed sync capability, you can turn day into night. It also has what they're calling Overdrive Sync, or ODS, which is a system that lets photographers optimize exposure at higher shutter speeds. It has 20 channels, 4 groups for either normal or speed mode, a handy one-touch quick lock mechanism, and a range of up to 656 feet outdoors or 196 feet indoors. I guess they couldn't get the extra 4 feet of reach indoors for 200. I don't know. These new Ellen Crom units are compatible with all 3 previous generations of their flash units and add sync and two-way control capability to all Ellen Crom lights that have EL Skyport capability. That's pretty darn sweet. They're available right now from the company's website for both Canon as well as Nikon DSLR users for roughly $250 US apiece. As we've reported on in the past, if you're a male photographer shooting in public, aim your camera at children and be prepared for great scrutiny. It's just a sign of our times. Parents are uber protective of little Johnny. Well, one of the latest to be scrutinized is Harvard-educated photographer and writer David Updike. On September 23, 2015, Updike found himself suddenly surrounded by police officers who questioned him about what he was taking pics of. This was in Cambridge's Dana Park, a public park. Remember, in America, you have a constitutional First Amendment right to photograph anyone in public, and that includes children, like it or not. We could go into the myriad of examples of famous photographers and artists who have done this, and if it's okay for them, it's okay for anyone. So fame has nothing to do with it. You're not certified to photograph children. But in this particular case, a woman apparently called police reporting him for, quote, taking pictures of children, end quote. Again, not illegal, not at all, not even a little bit. Well, Updike wrote an open letter which was published in the Cambridge Chronicle and Tab. It's too long to read here, but if you want to read it, we have it over in the show notes. But in it, he says, quote, my suspected crime apparently was having a camera in a public park and allegedly taking pictures of children. As it turned out, I had taken no pictures that day, but I have been photographing in this neighborhood for 30 years and have published a children's book of poems and photographs, always with permission, end quote. So police questioned him, had a look at the photos on his cell phone, and no arrest was made. I don't know why they even needed to talk to him, though. Taking photographs in public is not a crime. Sure, someone may be up to no good, but until there's an actual crime that's been committed, detaining someone and questioning them is kind of un-American. As I've said before, it's really the guy taking photos without your knowledge that you should be worried about. While you're focused on him, another guy is focused on your children. If it was a woman, of course, no problem. But since he's a man, he gets extra scrutiny.
This has gotten really way out of control. If you have a camera, you're a male, and you're in public, be prepared to be questioned by police, called a pedophile by overreacting parents, or worse. That's the age we live in. People who overreact can't be reasoned with. They are overreacting for a reason. They have a problem inside themselves and has nothing to do with you. If you're ever approached by one of these people, offer to call the police yourself. That should diffuse the situation. If it doesn't, you're going to need the police to help you with said overreactor, because they won't take no for an answer. Trust me on this, especially when their children are involved. As we've stated before, the wild, wild west days of drone ownership are pretty much over. If you own a drone or are considering one, now more than ever, it's important to pay attention to what's going on out there. On October 19th, 2015, the Obama administration announced that it'll be creating the first ever federal drone registry to deal with the craziness that has become drone usage by people that have more money than sense. Well, they didn't say that part, but you get the point. Under the proposed registry, drone owners would be required to register their drone or face the consequences. Let's not forget the story we reported on in episode 11, where a Chicago-based company looks to be facing $1.9 million in fines for running afoul of FAA regulations. According to a Reuters report, U.S. Transportation Secretary Anthony Fox revealed that the administration is putting together a task force consisting of industry and government representatives with the goal of coming up with recommendations for the drone industry. It hasn't been made clear just yet which drones would require registration, but my guess is they're going to draw a line at a certain weight and/or capability feature set. That just makes sense. In other words, those tiny drones that you can get at Walmart or Costco would likely be exempt. Why? Because it would be ridiculous to have those registered. They can't fly high enough to damage anything, and they're tiny. The real threats to air safety are the larger, more capable drones. The kind we've seen coming dangerously close to commercial jetliners in the past year or two. According to the FAA, nearly 100 drone/aircraft incursions happen every single month in the United States. That is just frightening, especially if you travel. Now, while these drones are really cool, they can indeed bring down a jetliner. So something needs to be done, and this registry is just one leg in that effort, along with education. The goal of this is to identify drone operators. In other words, if you're flying a drone where it shouldn't be flown, there's going to be a way to find out who the responsible party is. That is, if your drone is registered. If it's not, not so much. If you do register your drone, which you would be required to do, and you're flying where it shouldn't be, like close to an airport, a military installation, etc., they're going to be able to identify you. And that is the part of this that should have a chilling effect among drone operators. Now, of course, those that don't care won't register their drones, and they'll hope that they get away with it. But I think for most people, they're going to register their drones, they're going to know why they're registering their drones, of course, and hopefully that'll keep them away from restricted airspace. Right now, you can fly, do something stupid, and you may just get away with it. But with your drone registered, you could be toast. You could face jail time and or stiff fines. And if for some reason you bring down an aircraft and kill people, say goodbye to your freedom. Knowing that, responsible drone owners should think twice about doing something stupid, and hopefully we'll see incursions decrease dramatically. But it's the truly foolish and ill-willed individuals out there who could do some real damage. And that's where this anti-drone technology that other people are creating, and geofencing, and all the other countermeasures we've discussed here before come into play. The stated goal of this registry is to have it up and running by this Christmas 2015. That is quick. When does the government ever move that quickly? So I think that speaks volumes about the threat that they feel drones are. With the holidays coming up and with drones being cheaper than ever, the United States government is moving rather quickly on this to reduce the chances of a disaster occurring. There is no doubt about it. Secretary Fox said, quote, "The signal we're sending today is that when you enter the national airspace, it's a very serious matter. This isn't riding your ATV on your own property. This is actually going into the space where other users are also occupying that space. And it is a matter of responsibility that we will take seriously. And again, there are penalties that are associated with failing to do so." End quote. Translation, register your drone or else. And if you endanger aircraft, you're going to be held accountable. I'd like to thank you all for listening to episode 14 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Don't forget to check us out at petapixel.com/podcast for the show notes and to see what else we have for you. If you head over there, you can leave us a voicemail question that we can answer here on the podcast, or you can call us at area code 206-333-9308. And if you'd like to connect with me personally, hit me up on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook, where I'm at Lenshark, L-E-N-S-S-H-A-R-K. All right, with that, I'll see you all in episode 15.
Well, it's at 8:250 of a second outside. It's time to shoot.
Please subscribe to the Petapixel Photography Podcast. My daddy is the host.